forgot to put the recording on. My name is Matt McKenna. I'm the director of the Great Lakes Washington Program at the Northeast Midwest Institute. Thank you very much for joining us today for the Northeast Midwest Institute's briefing on Asian carp. I think we have a very esteemed group of panelists today to discuss the release of the 2018 Asian Carp Action Plan. I just wanted to briefly thank the Northeast Midwest Coalition and the leadership, especially Congressman Joyce, in helping us secure the space for today's briefing. I'm going to be very, very brief because we have a lot of speakers and a lot of information to go over, so I want to introduce to you the co-chairs of the Asian Carp Regional Coordinating Committee, Mr. Mike Weimer from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and Bill Boland from U.S. EPA. And I'm going to hand the mic over to Bill.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you all for being here. Good afternoon. My name is Bill Boland. I'm with the U.S. EPA and the co-chair of the ACRCC. I'm here with my panel members to tell you that thank you for being here, for, number one. Number two, we're going to share with you today in 38 minutes why we're going to keep the Great Lakes great. This is the A-team that you have up here. So I'm not going to introduce them just by first name right now, but I'll let them introduce themselves. On the end, we got our Bill Science and I guy, Leon Carl. We have our two biologists, fishery biologists, Charlie and Kevin. Charlie from Fish and Wildlife Service, Kevin from Illinois DNR. We've got the guy who keeps the maritime industry going and safe, Ben, who's going to make a short presentation. And we have Colonel Aaron Reisinger of the Army Corps of Engineers, who is our engineering guy. So with that, I'm going to turn over to Mike. We are going to release our 2018 action plan shortly, like today, this afternoon. This is the ninth action plan we put together. Again, this plan is focused on keeping the Great Lakes great. So with that, I'll turn over to Mike. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Bill. And I just want to echo Bill's thanks to Northeast Midwest and Matt for hosting the briefing today. Slide. Let's see here. Okay. I'm going to start with a refresher on the Asian Carp Regional Coordinating Committee. The ACRCC is a bi-national partnership of 27 U.S. and Canadian federal, provincial, and state organizations working toward the mission of protecting the Great Lakes from the introduction and establishment of Asian carp. We were formed back in 2009 to address the growing threat to the Great Lakes from the upstream advance of Asian carp populations moving up from the Mississippi River Basin. Strong focus was at the time and remains on preventing the movement, the expansion of bighead and silver carp populations, primarily up through the Illinois River. The scope of the partnership's work has since expanded to include potential secondary interbasin pathways and also emerging threats from additional species, grass carp and black carp. In brief, the ACRCC structure includes a U.S. federal agency subcommittee, a communication work group, which is co-chaired by the Fish and Wildlife Service and Illinois Department of Natural Resources, and a monitoring and response work group, or MERWG, which is co-chaired by Illinois DNR, and the Great Lakes Fishery Commission. The MERWG team is comprised of scientific and technical experts on Asian carp life history, research, and management. Okay. The action plan we're presenting today, which is formerly known as the Framework Strategy several years ago, has been produced annually by the ACRCC since 2010. The plan includes a comprehensive portfolio of interagency projects to provide strategic multi-layered defense, including early detection and monitoring, prevention, control, and rapid response projects. You'll hear more about those in just a minute. Additionally, the action plan directly complements our annual monitoring and response plan, which is developed annually by the MERWG team and the MRP. That serves as the interagency, sort of the on-the-water tactical battle plan, prescribes the timing and location of specific monitoring and management actions on the Upper Illinois Waterway, the Chicago Area Waterway System, and surrounding waters. Again, as I said, you'll hear a bit more about the MRP from Kevin in a few minutes. And finally, the action plan supports the goals and recommendations of the National Asian Carp Plan, which serves still as the baseline strategy developed back in 2007 with over 70 partners, agencies, industry, and others to provide the initial baseline framework was prompted by the growing threat of Asian carp, bighead silver, black, and grass carp across regions and watersheds in the United States. So I'm just going to provide a quick snapshot of some of the key initiatives included in the 2018 Action Plan. Under prevention and control, the plan features continued work on a new third permanent electric dispersal barrier being constructed by the Corps of Engineers in the Cause near Chicago. work to explore potentially future aquatic invasive species control actions at the Brandon Road Lock and Dam site in the Upper Illinois Waterway. Work to address secondary pathways of potential Asian carp expansion, those interbasin pathways I mentioned, specifically those identified in the Great Lakes Mississippi River Interbasin Study in Ohio. Under control, we feature the increased use of science-driven contract commercial harvest strategically targeted to address the adult population front in select pools of the Upper Illinois Waterway, and the refinement and use of a dynamic Asian carp population model to help inform and potentially guide potential management actions for implementation. Some key new key control technology and monitoring actions include conducting pilot field trials to evaluate the use of underwater sound technology systems as a strategic deterrent to Asian carp movement at key potential choke points in river systems and navigation channels. The further development of carbon dioxide as a barrier to carp dispersal, and continuing our interagency early detection, monitoring, and assessment efforts includes focused monitoring upstream and downstream of the barrier, and also the continued use of comprehensive eDNA at strategic locations within the Great Lakes. And we'll finish up here. We'll continue to plan for and support important interagency contingency response, or rapid response, in the event of the detection of Asian carp in a new upstream location adjacent to or upstream of the barrier. We continue our support for new projects to monitor and control emerging species, as I mentioned, including support for key state-led efforts in Lake Erie focused on grass carp. And finally, the ACRCC will continue close collaboration with existing interagency efforts in other basins, including work with MICRA and the Ohio River and Upper Mississippi River Basin Partnerships, and with the Council of Great Lakes Fishery Agencies and the Great Lakes Fishery Commission to leverage lessons learned, new strategies, and technologies to provide the unified and collective approach to battling and containing Asian carp going forward. So with that, I'm going to turn it back to Bill for a discussion on funding.
This is my one and only slide. It's very important to all of us. Thank you very, very much for your support. Without your support, the GLRI would be at a much reduced level. So thank you, thank you, thank you so much for that. We have $300 million this year that's been obligated. It's being obligated now. So we're getting those monies out the door as quick as we can. I'd also like to point out the base budgets for both Fish and Wildlife Service and USGS. So with your support and through the support of Office of Management and Budget, we've been able to increase those base budgets as well to, again, make the Great Lakes great and keep the Great Lakes great. So with that, I'll turn it over to my dear friend and colleague, Charlie Woolley.
Thank you, Bill. Good afternoon, everybody. Honored to be here. Talk for a few minutes about where we are with Asian carp in the Illinois waterway system with my good friend, Kevin Irons. A lot of you are very familiar with this map. This is our standard map that with the yellow star in the middle shows the Army Corps of Engineers electrical barrier. The good news with this map is that it stayed basically the same for about the last 5 or 6 years. We have about 3 locks and dams that are between large numbers of spawning size Asian carp down in Marcellus Starve Rock Pool. This is pretty consistent as to where we've been over the last 5 or 6 years. We have 2 locks and dams that separate any kind of Asian carp population from the Army Corps of Engineers electrical barrier. So a situation that is standard for this time of year. We've seen this evolving, and for the last 5 or 6 years, there hasn't been much change. So we're happy to report that the situation on the ground with the locations of Silver and Bighead in the Illinois waterway system is pretty good right now. What I always want to do, though, is refresh people's memories and let them know that we have had 3 bighead carp that were captured in the western basin of Lake Erie back in 1995, and 2 of them in the year 2000. So this area east of Toledo, south of Detroit, is an area that we constantly sample with our Ohio DNR, Michigan DNR, and Ontario partners. And then to the far left in the lower reaches of Lake Michigan, you can see the location of a bighead silver carp that was captured in Lake Calumet, and a silver carp that was in the T.J. O'Brien Lock and Dam area last year. These are the only two fish that we have on records that have been caught above the Army Corps of Engineers electrical barrier. The only two Asian carp, and again, I'm specifically mentioning silver and bighead. So this situation is pretty good. We're happy, and we do not want to see another yellow dot up there on that map. We're very vigilant. We have a lot of on-the-ground activities. This goes back to the point that Bill Boland made. We have the money that we need from Congress to do the work that we're supposed to do. We have Asian Carp Regional Coordinating Committee, GLRI dollars that come in. We have a significant amount of base funding that the service has received over the years. So with this money, we spend a lot of time working with our partners in the Illinois Waterway System and the Chicago Area Waterway System. We do sampling. We work with Illinois DNR to do intensive seasonal monitoring. We look at the distribution of small Asian carp down the Illinois waterway system. We're up into the Des Plaines with the state of Illinois helping monitoring there. We're utilizing our field-based presence to make sure we're the eyes and ears as to what's happening in this waterway system. Our activities are all based on partnerships. These are state waters. The Great Lakes are state waters. There's no federal nexus here with these waters. These waters belong to our state partners, and we go in as an equal and a partner with them to develop harvest strategies to help reduce numbers of Asian carp, to develop prevention and control actions in these areas. We're going to continue to look at the potential impact of barge entrainment with small Asian carp. We're working very closely with USGS, Army Corps of Engineers, and the barge industry themselves to do this work. We're addressing movement up the Illinois waterway system of black carp. This is very concerning to us. So we're spending a significant amount of time looking at the movement in the lower Illinois waterway system of black carp as they potentially get closer towards the Great Lakes. We're also very involved in the Great Lakes proper. And we have been involved in eDNA, environmental DNA work in the Great Lakes. Sampling, we're the country's eyes and ears as to working with our state partners, looking at potential spots in the Great Lakes where either bighead or silver carp could potentially make their ways to. In 2017, we sampled more than 5,300 eDNA samples throughout the Great Lakes. Each of those red circles indicates areas that we sampled. The good news, based on all the activity from last year, is that we had no positive detections of eDNA for bighead or silver carp in any of these areas that we sampled in the Great Lakes. So that's really a very good news story for us. We have been getting some additional support from Congress and direction from appropriators in Congress for the Fish and Wildlife Service to get more involved in grass carp work. And I just bring your attention to the underlying sentence here that we had $2 million included in our budget to expand and perfect the combined use of contract fishing and deterrence to extradite Asian carp, including grass carp, where they already are established. So a big ask from the appropriators, but certainly putting us on notice that they want to see the Fish and Wildlife Service, particularly working with the Ohio Department of Natural Resources and Michigan DNR, get more involved in grass carp, particularly in western Lake Erie. We have the money to do that. We're now in the process of sitting down with our two state DNRs to figure out what's our role and how can we get more involved to reduce the threat of grass carp expansion in western Lake Erie. We're also making sure, though, that the Canadians are involved in this process. So we've been sitting down with our Canadian counterparts, with USGS key researchers, looking at some of these potential spawning areas in western Lake Erie, developing a strategy to go in and find where those fish are and figure out a way to remove them. Again, a combined effort between the United States and Canada, particularly as it relates to the western basin of Lake Erie. My last slide is Lacey Act update. We had a D.C. Circuit Court ruling in April of last year that ruled that the statute does not prohibit transport of injurious wildlife between states within the continental United States. The good news here, though, for us in the Great Lakes is that all of our eight Great Lakes states that surround the Great Lakes, you cannot move silver and bighead carp in those states. So the states have already taken steps to eliminate that as a potential pathway for these fish to get into the Great Lakes. So that's a good thing. We salute our state partners for doing that. So although it may have impacts in other parts of the country, this Lacey Act ruling doesn't impact us in the Great Lakes at this point in time. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Kevin Irons.
Thank you, Charlie. Well, this is the time I get to talk about our monitoring response plan, really that lens of our ACRCC partnership that puts boots on the ground, that has a strategic, implementable way to defend the Great Lakes from Asian carp. I did bring a few of our 2018 plans together. This is an exhaustive plan, and probably the most integrated and comprehensive plan that we've put together. While two of them are on the back table, we do expect this to be released either concurrently or soon after this afternoon's release of the ACRCC action plan. So within that plan, like I said, it's the most comprehensive plan. It does focus on those three things Charlie talked about: detection, management and control, and contingency actions, those response actions that are necessary when things surprise us. From 2017, it's important to know where we came from, and we based our 2018 plan on what we saw, but one disappointing highlight was that capture of the silver carp near T.J. O'Brien Lock and Dam, and despite those necropsy results after the fish was caught, we don't know how that fish got there. We know we caught it very soon, within weeks or months of it arriving, and actually our first organized response or sampling plant in the canals after that fish arrived. So at least it does point to the fact that we have an appropriate and prudent monitoring detection in the canals, and the fact that no additional carp were found with those follow-up actions was very encouraging. Also, no eDNA, bighead or silver carp eDNA was found in the cause in 2017, even surrounding this capture. All that results of that event can be found on our Asian Carp website, www.asiancarp.us, where we do post things often to inform public and legislators and our fellow agencies. Removals to date have exceeded 6.3 million pounds. That was our 2017 number. We probably have already removed another 300,000 pounds here in 2018. These continued efforts are likely contributing to the successes we'll see, and I'll talk about here in a few minutes. But the DNR is working with a potential new partner, Exelon Nuclear, in the Dresden Island Pool, which actually is giving us access to their property, and it does account for a couple hundred fish being removed from an area we could not sample in prior years. Also, there's a lot of vigilance with our law enforcement. We can do all the right things on the water. We can stop the fish from moving, but humans have a tendency to move fish around. So we work very vigilantly to make sure those things aren't happening, so industries or individuals are not moving fish, having the right rules and regulations in place, and actually going out there looking for such people. Also, you know, if we do think back of Asian carp, the historical distribution, it is quite staggering. Our efforts are very important to prevent the spread between the Great Lakes and the Mississippi River Basin. However, it's a national concern, and when you see Asian carp here in green and yellow stretching from the foothills of the Rockies to the Appalachians, from Minnesota to New Orleans, this is a national problem. And while we can do our job and protect the Great Lakes, I don't want to overlook the fact that this is we need to support the national plans, state plans that work on these issues for the rest of the country. Otherwise, you know, we just stand at risk of overlooking those things with our efforts. From that information and all the concerted work we're doing across the agencies, we do have working groups we've established last year to make sure we have technical experts from both state and federal agencies guiding our efforts. So it's not the Merwig co-chairs. I have a great responsibility to help lead our partnership with John Detmers of the Great Lakes Fisheries Commission, but we count on these technical experts to help guide our efforts. Are we doing the right monitoring? Have we put the models in place? We want the models to guide our actions. And the roles of deterrence, USGS has provided a lot of information. So these work groups provide us information to help get to the right end point. So we have 12 detection projects. I'm not going to go into those details because they are likely unchanged from prior years. One new component is a glossary. At the end of the report, the detection folks have put together those gears and described them very clearly, so people who want to implement our actions can do that with the exact same gear and know how to get them and how to operate them. We do have management and control projects, 13. I'd like to highlight two of them, but this is really important because this actually reduces the risk that we've seen, and we have seen some successes. Our modeling efforts have shown us that we can review the data collected over the years and coordinate our efforts. In doing that, we have an enhanced contract removal project that takes the data from the model and applies it farther downstream where it can be even more effective. And collaboratively, we often talk about such efforts as kind of non-structural. This is not about building anything. This is about taking the fight to the fish and preventing the spread. I'll give you a few more insights in a few minutes. Our response projects, I told you about that silver carp. When we find things that we don't expect, we have to have a mechanism to help guide our actions. And this is borrowed from the incident command catalog of how to respond to national emergencies. And we have one just for Asian carp. So in the plan, you'll see very specifically what happens if a fish shows up, how do we respond to it, but equally, how do we communicate that results to the public, to other agencies? How do we get the needed support to get that action or the necessary actions put together? The very important part of our plan. So in 2017, we've got all these things working together. We had a key finding. And this is really important to take just a few minutes. Here what you'll see is the findings of the Monitoring Response Work Group and a result of implementing this management control. Removing fish from key areas over the past few years. This graphic talks about the decreasing population from downstream near Starved Rock to upstream near Dresden Island Pool over the time period of 2012 to 2017. And this gives us a pulse of what the fish abundance is doing. This clearly shows us that relationship, but also some historical lows. Key to that is our 2017, the last bullet to the far right of the screen in Dresden Island Pool. That's the last pool we consistently catch fish, detect them, and at that level in 2017 is 93% lower than the levels we detected in the same pool in 2012. It's very important that we know that these future trends only happen with continued action. Like mowing our grass, if we would stop doing our work, we would expect the grass to grow. And we do expect changes in the future. And with our modified and new efforts, we hope that number will continue to decrease. And finally, utilizing insights from our modeling efforts and recently released economic business plan, I did have one copy in the back. We're launching an even more enhanced contacted removal effort in 2018 to further protect the Great Lakes and specifically meet our management goals to increase mortality that prevents the upstream spread. These efforts suggest by removing fish from farther downstream, and we've moved that leading edge, that fishing edge farther downstream since we first started in 2010, we can prevent them from getting to Dresden Island at all. So the ultimate goals are determining the most effective locations to target based on our model, determining required mortality rates, and it says quota on the slide. We are not putting harvest quotas, but these are targets, harvest targets in place. Where do we want to remove the fish from? And then just basically using the best available science to direct our efforts. I believe Leon is coming up to talk about some of the USGS work in the Midwest. Up here, yep.
Okay. Thank you, Kevin. The USGS is working substantially on support of management agencies on Asian carp in 2018. I'm just going to touch on a couple of these now and then go into some specifics on several other things as we move forward. Excuse me. If you look at the hydraulic and water quality data, some of the things that we're using that for are to find spawners and find them at other times and building detection models so that we can determine where these fish are and how we would combat them as we move forward on it. Early detection, molecular technologies, we are constantly working on improving those. If you recall early on, there were some hiccups in terms of detection of fish and the cause and so forth. I think we've removed those and we're pretty firm on when we feel we've detected a fish and when we're pretty certain they're not there in the area. One thing that we've worked on for several years that's important is the handheld detector. It's a rapid detection
tool that allows, a conservation officer to take a sample of water from a bait fish tank, a fish that have been brought up from, say, an area where there are Asian carp, look at those, the water sample, and be able to detect whether or not there are any Asian carp in there. Small minnows are very difficult to detect. They do tend to get dropped off at the end of the day if someone's fishing with them. We can now stop that from occurring on a regular basis, and we've started to distribute those kits to the state agencies, and they're very, very pleased with that. The Brandon Road Lock and Dam, we are hydrologic support. We are there working with the Corps, supporting that effort as we move forward with that. This mass removal unified methodology, it comes from China. It's something that we're doing in support of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and also the Illinois DNR moving forward on it. Grass carp. The last time I was in front of you, we talked about some results that we had from 2017 that indicated a very substantial increase in the number of eggs in the Sandusky River. Never a good thing for a fish that you're trying to keep out of a water body. Since that time, we've done DNA analysis on those eggs. At least we've begun that. At this point, we're incomplete with the data, but the data suggests that there were a minimum of 50 spawners in that Sandusky River run. The good news is it's not 10,000 fish. The bad news is, obviously, it wasn't one female. It was probably 25 females and about the same number of males. As we get better information, we'll certainly pass that on to you. So not a good result, but it's a necessary one to know that, indeed, we should take the grass carp in the Lake Erie very seriously. Egg sampling will be conducted from mid-May to mid-August during high-flow events. And I'll just warn you, if you remember last time I talked about the only time that we actually detected spawning were in the odd years, because that's when, by chance, we had high flow events, and that's what triggers the grass carp to spawn. 18 is obviously not an odd year. We'll see what happens then, but we definitely will look at that and see if they're continuing to spawn there, and we'll monitor both that and the Maumee River, because we did indeed detect them at the Maumee site as well. They were very low numbers, but we did detect them. The ecosystem impact. Again, the last time I was with you, I talked about very preliminary information that indicated that the vegetation in Sandusky Bay had been cropped down. We don't know by why. It was lower than it should have been at that point, and the concern was, at a very low population level, were grass carp having an impact? That is not a good implication. We're going back in this year, and we need much better information on that. So we're going to be using remote sensing images as well as some other on-the-ground contacts or conduct there and moving forward on that, and track any potential changes in vegetation that we see to try to better understand what the potential impacts of grass carp and where to target control efforts. So we're very much aware that that is a real red flag and that we have to move forward on that. In anticipation of control and removal of needs by the states, by Ohio and Michigan DNR and Fish and Wildlife Service, we are in the process of formulating a bait for grass carp. It's very different from the microparticles, and identified a chemical that appears to specifically attract them in as we move forward on that. We will be modifying the bait as we move forward on this to incorporate that new chemical as we have to specify grass carp control in the future and attract them in. It's tough, as Ohio DNR, or I'm sure anyone can tell you, when there are just a few fish, it's really hard to find them. If we can attract the fish to us, it's much, much easier to control those fish. So that's what we're working on. In addition to that, we're working with states on removal methods. Again, it's tough to try to determine whether electrofishing works better than, say, seining if you're only catching one or two fish. So it's going to be difficult to do, but it's better to have that difficulty than have a lot of fish to work with. We're collaborating with Michigan State University, the Michigan DNR, and Fish and Wildlife to test catcher methods, including things like electrofishing and electrofishing with a trammel net, which is a little bit different from a gill net, to immobilize grass carp. Mass removal. I think that this is something that we're working on. It's called the unified method because it's basically using several methods to herd fish in and then capture them. The Asian carp, particularly silver and bighead carp are difficult to catch. I think that can be, it's obvious from the normal methods that we use. Kevin Irons and one of our scientists went to China and looked at how they do that. They've been very effective because they're pretty rare in their river systems. And we did that one test in Missouri, and we removed over almost 250,000 pounds of Asian carp, so that was quite successful. Direct implications to improving our mass removal techniques, and I suspect, Kevin, have you already started to use some of those changes with the Illinois River work that's going to be done this year?
We've implemented five or six times already.
Yeah, it's effective. The next step is that we're going back. Those have been focusing on shallow water. We're going back to China. Some of us are going back to China to look at deeper water. So instead of looking at 3 or 4 feet of water, we're going to look at 5 or 10 to 15 feet of water. There are techniques there that they use. We're going to find out what those are and be able to apply those as we move forward with that control, pushing the fish back down the river and anywhere else we decide that we want to remove those fish. Acoustic deterrence. This system was deployed in February to May of 18 at the request of the Illinois DNR and the ACRCC at the electric barrier while it was undergoing maintenance, and it was just a precautionary measure. No Asian carp were expected to be in the vicinity of that. You've already heard Charlie describe how far down they are in terms of the lock system. And scientists are identifying and refining new sounds in labs and pond trials to determine what methods are better in working with. We're working with the Corps, the ERDC lab down in Mississippi on that. The Fish and Wildlife Service did purchase a proprietary acoustic system. It's being planned for deployment in the fall of 2018, possibly at Lock 19 on the Mississippi River. That's a choke point where the fish can only go through the lock system to get up the river. Other locks and dams, they can go up and down the river at the dam at higher water events. We're also comparing different stimuli, sound stimuli. We already found that something as simple as an outboard motor deters Asian carp and does not deter other species of native species or native fish, so that's a good thing to know. I find this one actually encouraging, that we're talking about modeling and decision-making as part of that control effort, and we may be able to expand that as we move forward for it. So Charlie alluded to the fact that when you do crop a population down, what you see is the age structure. Instead of having old fish, you have young fish. That's pretty clear. You also have higher growth rates, and all that can be predicted as well as how many fish we're taking out of the system. And we can predict when we get down to that diminishing returns, when we're getting down to the point where they're not going to be successful spawning, and determining if that's a goal that we can reach, say, on one pool of the Illinois River, can we start to do that in other areas as well? So we're kind of taking the fight to the enemy, so to speak. And I think I find that is really quite exciting as we move forward with that. Additional activities, carbon dioxide is another one that we're working with. What we have found is most fish species do not like the presence of carbon dioxide for obvious reasons. They cannot breathe take in oxygen if there is that. We need to register that as a CO2 as a fish deterrent, and we're working with the EPA to do that at this point, and identifying field sites to evaluate CO2 injection feasibility with the Corps of Engineers. It's a challenge. CO2 is a gas, and it's in an aquatic environment where the water is moving around. And what we're trying to do is to maintain a high concentration of CO2, and that is what the challenge is. And you have to maintain that. You can't let it go out for a minute or two, because then the fish can move upstream at that point. So it has to be foolproof at that. So we're looking at that very closely with the Corps of Engineers moving forward. Transport of small fish. The Fish and Wildlife and the Illinois DNR talked about this earlier. We've had some issues with them being able to go between the two barges and move forward. We're continuing to look at that. We're also assessing what parts of the Illinois River we should be looking at that there's a high possibility that Asian carp eggs or larvae could be entrained, and that's the areas that we would focus on in terms of deterring the barges from having that. In other words, blowing them out with high pressure water or whatever we're going to do. Another thing that I've talked quite a bit about before, I'm not going to talk in great detail, is the whole issue with microparticles. Again, what we're talking about is that These are very tiny particles that are about the size of the food particle that the Asian carp, the two species, silver and bighead, eat, that have a known toxin in them. And we have been using that in ponds, testing it, and we're finding that we are taking out the Asian carp and leaving the native species there. So we're working, continuing to work on that. As you imagine, there's a lot of complexity to that issue. And we're also assessing the environmental fate of the lethal particles. That's one of the concerns that some of the state agencies have had. It's a very justified concern, and we're definitely going to work on that to make sure that these are as safe as can possibly be. And as I said, with grass carp, they eat big things, so we're no longer working with grass carp microparticles. We're working with dog chow particles, big particles, because that's what they eat. So we're making those adjustments. If we do need to work with the black carp, the ones that eat mollusks, we're going to be looking at something entirely different too. So those are the kinds of adjustments that we have to make. Each time you do that, you need to re-register it with the DNRs and with the EPA. So it's a bit of a challenge at that. But we are making a lot of progress on that as we move forward with that. And with that, I'm going to leave it to Colonel Risinger.
Through the bases.
Yep. Grand slam.
Good afternoon. I'm Colonel Aaron Risinger, the commander of the Chicago Army Corps of Engineers. The U.S. Army Corps is extremely proud to be part of the Asian Carp Coordinating Committee and present to you our planned actions to prevent the introduction and establishment of Asian carp in the Great Lakes. In support of the ACRCC's goal, the Corps employs a four-pronged strategy, aquatic invasive species strategy, targeted at bighead and silver carp. The first two prongs of the Corps strategy align with the ACRCC's action plan's prevention focus. As most know, we continue to operate the electric barriers near Romeoville, Illinois, in the Chicago Sanitary and Ship Canal within the CAS. The electric barriers are comprised of electrodes located at the bottom of the canal, and specialized equipment and control buildings generate a direct current pulse through the electrodes, creating an electric field that discourages fish from crossing. The system currently contains two barriers, Barrier 1, which consists of the demonstration barrier, and Permanent Barrier 1, which is under construction. And Barrier 2 is comprised of two components identified as Barrier 2 Alpha and 2 Bravo. The demonstration barrier has been operational since 2002. Barriers 2A and 2B were activated in 2009 and 2011, respectively. In 2013, we began construction of the permanent barrier upgrade to the demonstration barrier authorized by Congress in WERDA 2007. In 2018, we continued operation and maintenance of the existing barriers. In April, we completed the replacement of electrodes in Barrier 2 Alpha using GLRI funding. We also are continuing construction of Permanent Barrier 1, which is scheduled for full-time activation in 2021. Additional GLRI funding is included in the 2018 action plan to replace the demonstration barrier's electrodes as part of its upgrade to a permanent status. This work will all be done this calendar year. The second prevention action is the Great Lakes and Mississippi River Interbasin Study, or GLIMRIS, which looks at the options and technologies to prevent the transfer of aquatic nuisance species of concern between the Great Lakes and Mississippi River basins. GLIMRIS is executed in two focus areas. The first one is focused on the CAS, which comprises two aspects, GLIMRIS Brandon Road and then GLIMRIS two-way transfer. And the second one is Focus Area 2, which addresses the other pathways, other potential pathways identified in the original GLIMRIS report. The Corps is working with the states to close the most significant of these other pathways. Specifically, we're providing technical support to Ohio for the closure of two pathways to Lake Erie along the Ohio-Erie Canal and Little Kilbuck Creek. In 2018, we are also continuing the work of the Brandon Road Feasibility Study. Last fall, we completed the public comment period for the tentatively selected plan that included four public meetings held in locations in the Great Lakes and the rivers. Since that time, we received a letter of intent. Since that time, we received a letter of intent to be the non-federal sponsor from a coalition led by the state of Michigan. However, because of the non-federal partnership requirements, we had to inform them that we could not accept that offer. We also received a letter of intent from the state of Illinois and are coordinating a way ahead with them now. We are working aggressively to complete a chief's report sooner than the current date of August 2019. The next line in the USAID strategy lines up with the action plan's technology focus area. In part of this effort, we study electric barrier's effectiveness and make adjustments as necessary. With the Engineer Research and Development Center and our partners at U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services, USGS, we're conducting multiple laboratory and field studies on measures to mitigate against barge entrainment and developing deterrents such as carbon dioxide and sound, as you've heard previously. We will be finalizing our report on the water jet testing conducted last summer. We are supporting U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service as they test sound throughout the Ohio River Basin. We continue to refine the sound propagation model so that we can better understand how better to use that tool in implementation at the Brandon Road location. And we are supporting USGS as they continue research on the use of carbon dioxide at core navigation structures. The last line follows the action plan's early detection, monitoring, and evaluation focus area. As part of the ACRCC's monitor and response work group, the Corps participates in extensive monitoring in the Illinois River and the Kaz. We also perform research on monitoring tools such as telemetry and lead the contingency response subgroup. Kevin Irons from IDNR described the contingency response plan a few minutes ago. The Corps, as required in FY 2016 appropriations bill, established formal procedures for using emergency authorities provided to the Secretary by Congress to prevent Asian carp from passing beyond Brandon Road Lock and Dam. The contingency response group will ensure the MRWG contingency response plan and the Corps' procedures remain in sync. We use a telemetry program to assess the behavior of Asian carp in areas where they are present by implanting them with transmitters so that we can track their movement. We track the movement of other types of fish, not Asian carp, near the electric barrier to help us assess the system's efficacy. Aquatic invasive species control is a shared responsibility. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers appreciates all of the several federal, state, and local agencies in the United States and Canada working collaboratively to address Asian carp issues on behalf of the ACRCC. Thank you. I'll be turning it over to Ben Goodall from the U.S. Coast Guard to speak on navigation.
Good afternoon. As Colonel said, my name is Ben Gullo. I serve Coast Guard Headquarters on active duty. I'm a Lieutenant Commander. A part of my portfolio is to oversee waterways management issues, which brought me here this afternoon. So first off, good news. I was a late addition, so I didn't bring any slides. And then, of course, if you look at your agenda, I've been allotted a total of one minute to speak here today. So promise to be somewhat curt. Bad news, of course, is that I'm a lawyer by trade, so I may get a long-winded. I'm at a headquarters for the day, so this is a treat for me. But in all seriousness, I got my handler in the audience, Commander Shammy, and he outranks me, so he'll pull me back if need be. So in my 10-plus year career, I've been stationed in Buffalo, I've been stationed in Cleveland, I've been stationed at Toledo. So as a Coast Guard officer and also as an officer that's been assigned throughout the Great Lakes, I'm very much appreciative on behalf of the Coast Guard of Congress's support toward the initiatives of this committee. I'm equally appreciative on behalf of the Coast Guard for all of the collaboration and coordination with the other agencies that are here today. Certainly for the Coast Guard, as Colonel mentioned, our interests are navigational safety. So the Coast Guard, how do we support, how will we continue to support, and that's easy, that's marine safety, to make sure that vessels are transiting through these waters safely. And that's evidenced by the regulated navigation area that we stood up years ago, that we stood up as a result of our broad authorities under the Ports and Waterways Safety Act under Title 33. Bill had mentioned before, keep the Great Lakes great. I would certainly echo on behalf of the 9th District Commander, Admiral Noonan, that she shares that sentiment moving forward. And as a consequence, District 9 in Cleveland, as well as the sectors, are participating in working groups with this committee to ensure that the initiatives move forward. So in conclusion, I just, again, want to thank everybody for the invitation here. I want to thank Bill for the invitation. Thank everybody for the continued partnership, especially the Army Corps of Engineers, who we've worked with for many years and will continue to do so over many years to come. So with that, I'll go ahead and turn it back over to Bill.
It's a wrap. So we're going to take Hughes and A's in a minute. I'd just like to point out that at 2 p.m. today, the action plan will go live on asiancarp.us, so please check for that. And close with this. You know that Asian carp are attracted by plankton and algae. I'd just like to point out that I'm wearing my Asian carp attractant shirt and tie today intentionally for this crowd. I can assure you I was at the Potomac last night. No Asian carp jumped out of the water at me, so that's good news. With that, we're going to take Q's and A's. I'm going to throw over to Mike for that part of it, so please bring your questions forward.
Any other questions? Front row.
I just have a quick question. When you were looking at the grass carp and where you were breeding in the big events, how far back did that go? They were kind of hunting in odd 3 years ago.
I think we started about 2014. We have data back to 2011 because we can look at the fish that have been captured and using aging structures to tell how old they were, and predict back that they were from 2011 spawning. So 2011, 13, 15, 17 is where we have captures of juveniles or larger fish. In 2015 and 17, we caught eggs. We captured eggs in the Sandusky River. So there are two different sources there that allow us to go back that far.
Right. Cool. Thank you.
With regard to the drainage issue, I know that there's been some studies of navigation protocols. I was wondering if you could kind of talk about what those are and what, how the studies are going.
The, we're working with the barge industry right now to start to actually develop some protocols. We don't have anything that's been implemented right now. We have some interest in continuing to look at what is being called a hard reverse to get those fish flushed out of these areas between the connected barges. So we're looking at that. We're also working with USGS as it relates to a massive amount of water that can be pumped up, bubbled up from the bottom of the canal to flush them out from beneath the barges. So that's another option. But and we'll spend this summer going out, again, looking at this so we can come up with a range of options that fit the barge industry as well as make sure that any potential movement of Asian carp is prevented. But it's all in concert with the barge industry, and if you're going to make some kind of recommendations, they would go through the Coast Guard.
Yeah, just to follow up on what Charlie said, you heard Kurt Risen mentioned the water jets that are being kind of further investigated. And also, we did have some questions from industry that were about, you know, realistic, real world damage. So, in other words, a barge transiting through the Illinois waterway, what's the likelihood of actually interacting with a cloud of small fish and so forth? So, I think Leon mentioned some of that work to predictively have a look at, you know, what fish are present where within the waterway. So, we will be out there doing actual additional training investigations in collaboration with the Illinois IGS. And that's part of what's planned as well for this year, not for the year.
Further questions? Yes, ma'am.
So, in regard to the EDNA samples, there being zero positives, based on your data, some places don't have any fish. So, what volume of water is needed to be able to potentially get a positive? And is there such few that are there that would be very hard to get a positive sample for EDNA?
And it's possible, but the techniques have expanded and have moved forward with such precision over the last 4 or 5 years. You don't need a lot of fish out there to be able to come and get the amount of DNA that maybe you would need 10 years ago when the science was just developing. Leon spends a lot of time with his folks, and he may have some additional answers.
I can't answer that specifically, but I can give you an example where we're using the early detection kit that we have, where we have placed, and we've done proper repetitive sampling and so on, we have placed one Asian carp in with 10,000 nanos, and then we have lights as well, and we run that line, we're able to detect one Asian carp in 10,000 nanos. So it's a pretty strong sensitivity to that. Whether we can detect one Asian carp in 10,000 acres of water is a different question.
Anybody else? In the back, Daniel again.
Sorry.
You're up.
Colonel, can you clarify why the joint letter of intent was unacceptable to the court, which is Illinois' letter of intent was acceptable?
Sure. So, essentially it came down to what the State of Michigan the Coalition did with the law that was passed apart as an object of sponsor by the Mississippi River Division determined that they would not be able to provide what's required with one bill sponsor for the study. And so that's why the letter was sent to the state of Michigan stated it would not be accepted.
Aaron, did you have something?
Yeah, I guess I'll just bounce off that question. On the rejection, I was just curious, I guess, a two-part question. One is for the Corps, is the Army Corps doing things to work with the necessary non-federal sponsors to find an agreement on the operation and maintenance cost, particularly to address inadequacies that are here rejected. And then two, Mr. Irons, is the state of Illinois interested in being a non-federal sponsor? It surprised me. I wasn't aware of a lot of states that turned down money from other states into a project, and I recognize the jurisdictional issues with your land, but whether the state of Illinois was interested in being a non-federal participant, even if it's only when it comes to easements and real estate and those kind of issues, that's an infrastructure issue.
So I probably answered both questions in one shot. So we have received a letter from the state of Illinois recently expressing the interest to be a non-profit sponsor. And so on my understanding, we're meeting this week, the Rock Island District.
For the O&M part, I'm sorry, not the construction part. So talking about the specific, the O&M, the rejection of the money for the O&M.
Right. So my understanding is the state of Illinois has offered some options on how to manage that. They were in discussions with them on how to do that. It very well may potentially include a coalition of states in the Mountains region. So I think we're absolutely open to many different options. It was just found that the state of Michigan would not be able to provide sort of those core requirements of the non-federal sponsor. But I think we're open to a lot of ideas and work with the state of Illinois. In fact, this week, I'll try to turn my way ahead.
Thank you. So in our letter specifically, we draw on our partnerships and the people around the basin that we can work with and listen to find out the best possible.
And Aaron, this is Bill. So as you well are aware, the non-structural things that the state does, like commercial harvesting, fishing, netting, seining, is all 100% GLRI funded at this point in time. So that's, again, why we need your all support on the GLRI. So thank you. Any other questions? All right.
I understand the work plan the Army Corps is going to be putting out the updated one in light of the passage of the omnibus bill for FY18. Will there be sufficient funding in the work plan to ensure that the Brandy Road TSP process continue not just through September, but unfortunately, as you all know, we're not so great lately at passing up bills on time in the fiscal year. But will there be sufficient funding in the work plan to ensure the work will continue into fiscal December?
Right now, the work plan is still under review of the agency. It hasn't been released, so I won't be able to answer that with any specificity.
Okay, thanks.
Anybody else? Last call. Thank you so much for attending today. Let you get back to what you do on a normal basis. So, again, thank you from sincerely from all of us.